Right, welcome everybody. It's episode 16. I checked this time before I started.
So hey, all right.
I don't even have to hesitate. It's episode 16.
We know for certain.
For certain. All right. So I'm gonna break with tradition a little bit, and
okay,
we're gonna go to the view that we use to go through all the articles, but we're still going to start with some non-cloud talk, as usual. Did you watch Fallout?
I didn't. So it's out and available now?
Yep. I watched the first episode last night. Obviously, with Amazon, I think they do this with all their shows, right? It's all 8 episodes available for you to watch now. So that is good. I'm making sure we ration our use of Fallout time, because I swear I could have sat last night and watched like half of them. So episode one. Yeah. I really liked it. I think.
Okay.
It felt like sort of, you know, the socials were kind of mixed on it and people were like complaining about the storyline and it didn't make sense. If you just forget that it's like, I should say it this way, just remember it's an adaptation of it. So they're going to take some liberties. Right. I thought it was a great first episode. I really liked it. I'm looking forward to going to watch another one tonight. I thought it was good. The production quality was good. I really enjoyed it. I'm excited about
it. That's exciting. That's awesome. So I'll watch that tonight then and let you know what I think, because
yeah.
I've been looking forward to this for a while, so.
Yeah, you know, I was doing the how many sleeps kind of thing. I was bugging Karen about it. I'm like, is it on? And she's like, no, you gotta wait. And I'm like, oh man. So last night after work, we sat down. I'm like, it's the 11th. They're there.
It's today.
Yeah, and I even saw Andy Jassy posting on LinkedIn, and it was great. He even used like. He talked about grab a Nuka-Cola and sit down and enjoy the episodes and stuff. So I thought it was really good. I had to do a little explaining. There's some things like, you know, if you didn't play the video game, you wouldn't know. So like, you know, what's a stim pack and sort of some of the crazy weapons they come up with. But I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the rest of them. Yeah. Any movie recommendations? Any really bad things you watched this week that you just got to tell everybody about?
What did we watch? It was pretty bad. We watched Angry Birds 2. We didn't watch the first one. We just jumped.
You skipped right over that first one. Yeah, was bad.
That certainly a film. You know, there's some gems in there.
Yeah,
there's some like. For very strange jokes that land, like they're just so off kilter that I make that it lands really hard. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend it as an activity.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll cross it off my list. I had it on the watch list, but I'm taking it off now. We watched a couple other things, and you know, at the time I was like, you should write these down because there was something that was pretty good, actually, and then there was something that was really bad, and I was hey, you could use that to start the podcast. And of course, I wandered away and started doing something else, and I don't know about
but
I watch a movie, and even if it's a good movie, for the most part, my brain just like, it's like Men in Black, right, where they, bloop, and it's just like,
it gets neuralized.
It's just gone. Yeah, neuralized. Yeah. So it's completely gone. But I did remember Fallout, so definitely watch it. It's worth it, especially if you're, I would say even if you're not a fan, it's a good, it's a fun little series, right? I know I'm only one episode in, but you can usually get a pretty good sense, I think.
From the pilot, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Characters seem good. It was fun. All right. Let's jump into the updates for the week. I think, you know, if I remember as I was going through the updates, I think a lot of the updates are kind of along the theme that we've mentioned over the last couple of weeks, just sort of quality of life type things. So here's another one. And, I always kind of forget that not everything supports tagging. And not everything, even if it does support a tag, doesn't mean you can necessarily do it through something like an infrastructure as code tool with CloudFormation. So here you go. Another thing that you should add to your to-do list, right? You can now tag your CloudWatch resources programmatically using CloudFormation.
Right. Yeah. Now supports tagging alarms with CloudFormation specifically. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
Right. Which, you know, like I said, I don't know. Tagging is kind of one of those things that you only think, I shouldn't say you, people, a lot of people only think about after the fact. Like they want to do something and they're like, tags could do that. Oops. So I think like having a tagging strategy. Yeah. For billing. Yeah. Having a tagging strategy from day one is, you can't go wrong with that. Right. So just come up with what that is and tag everything that you can.
Yeah, what's the structure we usually see? At least application and environment tags are good starting places. Then you can add those tags again to some kind of billing report and get information based on like cost information distributed by application, for example. So
yeah, and we're actually doing something like that right now with a Kudos dashboard for a customer, because you can go in there.
Oh, sure.
And you can, I can't remember what they call it, but you can add this little, I'll call it a tagging feature in Kudos, but then you can use all of the tags to slice and dice the billing information. So that's always handy, right? I also think don't forget about the importance of tags for automation.
Like
you mentioned the environment tag, turning off all your dev machines on the weekends and stuff like that. Sure. Those are always really handy.
Yeah, it's a quick script to write that, right? If you have the tags in place, you don't have to do any influence.
Yeah. Exactly. So there's the first one, right? CloudFormation supports tagging your CloudWatch alarms. Here's another CloudFormation one. So you can now deploy your knowledge bases for Bedrock through CloudFormation, and it also now supports service quotas as well. So I
gotcha.
I hadn't looked at service quotas, but I guess you can now make requests through the service quota dashboard.
Looks like specifically for knowledge base. This is in Bedrock. So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. And
it's for API calls. Yeah.
API calls. Yeah. So it says there in the last sentence, second paragraph, you now have quick access to information such as the allowed number of retrieve and generate API requests per second, which you can modify to moderate your traffic. So again, just infrastructure as code in general is always a good thing. So adding support for some of these new Gen AI tools is always handy. Not much you can really say about that one, right? It's
not really.
No, it is what it is. It's not fancy. And this one I stumbled across because somebody I follow on Twitter said, "Hey, look, I can get beer domains now." So you can now supports a bunch of top level domains for Route 53, including. There we go. .beer.
Essential for any connoisseur of domain registration.
Of course.
We got .christmas in there.
.christmas.
.fun. Wow. How exciting.
I did look at a screenshot somebody had posted. I don't know if they actually registered it or not, but I think a .beer top level domain costs you $32 a year.
Okay. So like a cheap 24.
I guess you could add another domain to your project list that you'll probably never use for anything.
That's
other
right.
than the fact that you own the dot beer domain for something.
Yet another domain to hoard.
Yeah. I broke that habit a number of years ago. A friend of mine from university, we went through this whole stage where we had all of these ideas, right, for projects.
Oh, yeah.
And really, I would say like 99.9% of those projects, the only work that was actually ever done was by the domain. And then every single time the domain renewal would come up, you'd be like, well, I'm not getting, I can't get rid of that now, right? I'm going to work on that this year. I think at one point he had, and I won't tell you how many domains I had, but I think he had like dozens upon dozens of domains. I should ask him actually. Let me text him. I'm going to see. We'll do like a, it's like phone a friend thing. Let me text him.
Oh, this is exciting.
Yeah. Let's see if he actually responds. Let's see.
I'm in my phase of domain accumulation.
Are you?
Like right now. Yeah, I've got some domains.
How many do you have
there.
Roughly? What do you think?
Not that many. Maybe like 10 or 12.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not too bad. That's not a problem yet, right?
When does it start to become a problem? Is it 15, 20?
Yeah, let's 24. Go with if you have more than you can easily remember, I think that's like when you could start thinking about like thinning out the number of domains that you're paying for.
Yeah,
okay, so let's see, how many domains do you still have registered? Let's see if he answers. I'll keep an eye on the phone. I want to know now. He had some great ones, right? You know, here's how bad my domain addiction got for a while. There's this service. Can't remember what the name of the service was, but let's say you wanted a domain, right? But it was already taken. What you could do is you could go into this service and say, watch this domain for me. And if it becomes available, I'm willing to pay X dollars for it. And as much as I think I've controlled most of my domain collection tendencies, I actually got a notification the other day that they bought a domain on my behalf. Now, I say the other day, it was probably a couple months ago, but I now have a domain that I didn't even remember saying I wanted. And that little system sat there and kept watching it. And eventually it came up and the person didn't renew it. And I'm now the proud owner of it. And
congratulations.
Yeah, I don't know what I'll ever do with it, but I now own it. So fantastic. So there you go. You can get more of, you can satisfy more of your domain acquisition. What's the word I'm looking for? Addiction through Route 53 now.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. At least this way, all of your domains are in one spot.
There you go. Yeah. Easy to use in AWS.
Yeah, exactly. I'm watching my phone at the same time to see if he responds back. I'm gonna put it where I can see it easier. You know what? What'll happen is as soon as we finish, he'll text me back. So
right, as soon as we stop the stream.
Yeah, exactly. Here's another one. Interesting, just because we've been working with some container-based solutions lately, and I've always been a fan of I'm going to use the term add-ons. I think that's what they call them, but being able to kind of add on this sort of managed capability. So you see now that VPC CNI, which I can't remember what CNI stands for anymore, but it will do subnet discovery for EKS. So not a really big change, but kind of the thing that I always like about these is that particularly with EKS, as they support these add-ons, it removes some of the manual configuration, like having to maybe connect to the EKS cluster to do something. Feels more managed service. So I thought this was an interesting one when it popped up in my list.
Yeah, now you can tag VPC subnets to add them under management for your EKS cluster, and it'll start partitioning nodes in that IP, those IP ranges for those subnets. So that's useful.
Yeah, and you had to do this manually before, didn't you? Not manually. You could put it in your templates and stuff, but you had to tag all the stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought. There is one other, that's all the updates that I added to the list this week. I don't know if it's just me, but I'm so inundated with AWS updates all the time. Like I look at it every day and I kind of felt this week, it felt like a little bit of a lull. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not like I'm capturing how many updates there are every week. So I don't know, but it just kind of felt like there wasn't anything that jumped out at me that was like crazy interesting / exciting.
Let's see. Yeah, there were a lot of updates that were essentially service X is now available in regions Y, Z, et cetera. So,
yeah. Now, the one update that I didn't put in here that I was excited about and actually had a customer tell me this morning they've already tried it out is you can now do, I'm going to call them short links, I think they called them. For SSO. So instead of having to log into the SSO console and then say, I want to use this role in this account, you can create a short link. And like I could create the short link and give it to you. And you still authenticate, obviously, but you don't have to go through that console. And you can even create short links all the way down into a service. So you could write a short link and say, you know, I'm always going to CloudFormation in account X. And instead of having to click through all those things, then you just can use the short link and get there.
It'll drop you in the service page.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's handy.
I thought that was really interesting. You know, it reminded me there's an application, like a free application that I was using for a while. I think I've maybe mentioned before that I'm using Granted now for most of my access to all the accounts. Yeah. But there's another sort of Granted-like solution. And, you know, I can't remember what it's called. So I've plugged one thing and forgotten the other one. The other one was actually what I was using first. And when I saw this sort of short link idea, I immediately thought of this other solution. It's built by an AWS hero. I follow them on Twitter and I can see the person. I wish I could give them the plug that I wanted to. Sorry, say that again?
Was it the AWS Vault solution? Or
no, it's a little client-side application that you can run that manages your CLI configs and stuff like that, but you can also configure it for SSO. And my memory of it is that it's had this concept of short links for a long time. So you could like open up, you could see the view of the account that you wanted. And instead of just saying, go to the console, you could go right to particular service. And I'm damned if I can remember what it's called now. But last time I looked, I kind of shifted away from it to Granted because I can't remember what made me change directions on it. Probably no particular reason. I think somebody mentioned it and I wanted to try it. And I just found it easier to do. So I moved over there. So you've got short links as well. Kind of
great.
Yeah. All right. So that's the AWS update portion of the show. Let's move on. The first thing that I found this week was, I'm going to call it a follow-up article on the Just Walk Out technology that we talked about last week, where they had let a bunch of people go and stuff. And I found this after the previous episode. I thought this was really interesting in the fact that basically they're saying it never really worked. And what happened was the sort of gist of the article is that there were a ton of human folks involved in this, and that in what would end up happening is you might not actually get your bill for hours, because what was happening was there were so many humans involved to look at what you actually got, and they were actually doing a lot of the heavy lifting. And the article talks about the fact that Amazon's intention was, as they trained the system and it got better, they'd need fewer and fewer human editors, and they just were never able to get to that. So
they never got that critical mass of data, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They were just spending so much time and effort having to basically have somebody review everything that you put in your bag that they could never figure the technology out. So that's kind of goes along with the article that we saw last week, right? Just a different spin on it.
Wow. So it's almost powered by Mechanical Turk at that point.
Yeah, pretty much, right? So you can see here, nearly 1,000 human video reviewers were looking at everything. Yeah. And, you know, they said here somewhere in the article, their goal was to get it down to the number of reviews between 20 and 50 per 1,000 sales, but they just could never do that. So they ended up, here's one of those smart carts that we talked about last week.
Right.
Which actually makes a lot of sense, right? Obviously, it would be very expensive to have people having to review every single thing that went.
Oh, for sure.
Tried to leave the store, right? So probably much cheaper for them to go this path. So when I stumbled across this, I thought it was a good follow-up.
Interesting. Yeah, it's kind of the curtains pulled back.
Yeah, I get a little sense of what they were actually doing. All right, this one's a little closer to home. Just last week, the federal government, Canadian federal government, committed $2.4 billion to AI, compute, startup, safety in the latest sort of run-up to the federal budget in Canada. I just kind of thought this was interesting. in true politician speak, we're going to spend a bunch of money on a whole bunch of stuff. Yay. There's not really, at least from what I could find, there's not a lot of meat to this yet. Like, where's it all going to go?
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought it was interesting just because we talk a lot about AI and stuff. And obviously the federal government in Canada is getting involved here, maybe more so than they have up to this point. So, interesting article. I'll make sure that I include this one in the show notes. But you can see here kind of where they're spending money. At least they've kind of broken it down a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. It's top of mind for everyone. So they're trying to appear like they're keeping up the trends, right? So,
yeah. And I thought it was interesting. I'm reading a book right now, which I can't remember what it's called. We've talked about the author a couple times. I mentioned him a couple times in the previous podcast. His name's Ethan something. And Twitter, I follow him. He talks a lot about Gen AI and stuff, and he has a book. And I want to call it, I should have written it down, but it's kind of about just like leveraging AI and the safety of AI and making sure that you can trust it. And the book is really good, but kind of made me think of this article a little bit, because somewhere in here, they talk about sort of spending money in order to ensure that, you know, AI is being used safely and responsibly, which is obviously a really important aspect of AI. So kind of made me think of that book. I'll bring the book for the next article.
Is that Ethan Mollick you're talking
about?
Ethan
Mollick. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good book. I stumbled across it probably reading one of his Twitter posts or something, and I'm about halfway through it. My goal was to try to finish it for today, and I just didn't manage to get through it. I'm still really addicted to a bunch of Cory Doctorow books, so I've been spending more time on those than the AI book. But it's an interesting book. I think it's probably a collection of his thoughts over, you know, Twitter articles and stuff like that, and his newsletter. So it's worth a read. I'll remember it for next week.
Book club next week.
Book club, yeah. And I thought this was just fun. How to play solo D&D with ChatGPT. So Michael Cote, I've followed him for a long time. He's kind of like, I'm going to call him like an analyst. I don't know if that's a fair way to sort of bucket what he does, but he's been around for a long time. Talks a lot about just technology in general and trends and stuff like that. And he's been talking a lot, even us, just about not ChatGPT, but just Gen AI in general. He's been experimenting playing solo D&D with ChatGPT. And he's actually made you can see here, he's made a number of videos on this. So we've got advanced ChatGPT prompts for D&D. Solo D&D playing here. And I stumbled across this last week and I thought it was kind of fun. And he actually shares his prompts that he's using and everything and kind of what works and what doesn't work. So I just thought it was kind of fun, but I'll
put that in the show notes. Okay. Yeah. This was a huge deal when OpenAI first released ChatGPT, right? People were, this is one of the first things people tried to do was get it to play D&D or generate fantasy campaign situations.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see someone dedicating a lot of time to prompt engineering specifically for this kind of game running.
Yeah. And I would say that the general takeaway that he talks about, what I love about this particular video is, where are we? We're 23 seconds in right here. Yeah. Changes to black and white. And he's like, you've probably stopped watching even right now. And we're 27 seconds in. Which I can vouch for because we publish a lot of content on YouTube and usually the average watch time is a minute, maybe, right?
Retention. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And after that, you know what? I'm going to go watch something else. But this is, even if you watch nothing, you watch, let's say, the next 30 seconds of this video, start at the executive summary and just watch this one chapter. He goes through and he talks about how he's kind of working through it and figuring out, how it works. And I think if I was to summarize it, I would generally say you have to be very, very specific which I think is good general advice, whether you're trying to use Gen AI to play D&D or something else.
For any kind of problem.
Really? Yeah. You got to be very specific, right? And in particular with D&D, he's saying that you have to make sure you tell it not to tell you what's going to happen. Because he says, like, in a lot of cases, he's like, he will tell you something like, you're going to run into goblins around the corner when you turn the corner. And he's like, that's no fun. And his other comment was that the combat part of D&D, it does a pretty good job, but the storytelling and the creative nature of it, you still have to be extremely precise. Otherwise, it'll kind of ruin the story on you or go in directions that you didn't expect it to do.
Right. I can easily see it's generating spoilers.
Yeah. One other thing that he's done that really caught my eye, he was using, because we were talking about sort of, you know, story generation and stuff like that. And the other thing that he mentioned, and he does have a video about it somewhere, is using Midjourney, I think, to generate maps even.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So if you're interested in this kind of thing and maybe not even to play D&D, but just again, thinking about different prompts and stuff like that, how you might use them. He had some pretty impressive adventure maps built by just prompting Midjourney. Mm. So this made me smile. I'm a big fan. He's got his own podcast. It's called Software Defined Talk, which I listen to on a regular basis. So when they mentioned this, I went and looked at it. I'm like, I'm going to add this. It's just fun. So there's that one.
Yeah, that's pretty. If it generates good maps, that's a kind of that's pretty great, because that's a lot of work if you're running a game. A lot of effort gets put into generating good terrain maps, good hex, so that kind of stuff. So,
The one little snippet I watched of it, he even had like the hex overlay on them that it had generated. Now, I didn't dive into all the prompts, so I did the typical YouTube thing. I watched like 30 seconds of it and kind of had a chuckle and was like, hey, this is neat. And then I moved on. So I don't know exactly the prompts he was using and stuff like that, but some of the examples that he showed looked pretty impressive. Kind of neat. And I've spent my week, a lot of this week. Let me go back to the Ethan Mollick thing. One of the really interesting parts in that book that I've been reading is his comment. Go ahead.
So to clarify, is it Living and Working with AI, the book you're talking about?
No, hang on. I'm gonna find it, because now I it's gonna bug me.
Co-intelligence.
Co-intelligence. That's it. Good find.
Okay.
It's definitely worth a read. Regardless of where you are in your own AI journey. But one of the things that kind of stuck out at me in the book, and I realized that this is what I've been doing now for quite a while, is the comment that he makes is something along the lines of, invite AI into everything that you're doing. Like it's your companion. But he also goes along and says, like, don't think of it as a human, think of it as an alien. And again, I'm paraphrasing, like, kind of to the same thing we were talking about with Kote and D&D and maps and stuff. You have to be very specific. Otherwise, it can kind of go off in tangents that you maybe don't intend. But like this week, I can honestly say almost everything that I've done this week, I've had AI, either ChatGPT or Claude or Claude in Bedrock, sort of in the other window, and I'm moving back and forth between. It's been involved in pretty much everything I've done this week. And I know it's only anecdotal, but I feel like I was much more productive on the work that I was doing this week than maybe in previous weeks, where I was relying only on my own brain to get stuff done. Mm-hmm. Just having that companion there to help you with it was kind of interesting. So yeah, use it all the time, I guess, is what he's saying, just so you can figure out where it can help you and maybe where it falls down a little bit. So kind of interesting. Okay, let's change gears. I'm going to call this segment unofficially Chip Wars. Because I think...
It does feel like it's been Chip Week, right?
Yeah, and I'm looking on the tab here on the browser. Can you see the browser tab? You can. The next six tabs are all chip related. So yeah. The first one, I stumbled across this, Intel introducing a new, I don't know how you say it, Gaudi, I don't know.
Gaudi?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. A new chip, a Gaudi, new AI Gaudi, chip. Yeah. Say, call it whatever you would like, I guess, right? Yeah. You know, I think, you know, a lot of these articles, very similar to the Meta article we talked about a couple weeks ago, it's kind of like, wing, right over my head. Like, they're deeply technical. They're talking about specs and throughputs and things that I think most people will look at and go, okay, including myself. Like, my main takeaway of this was, you know, from a consumer's perspective, the more companies that are investing time and money and developing these chips, the better off it will be long-term for consumers. Whether you're thinking about wanting a fancy chip on your laptop sitting on your desk, or whether you're using them sort of as part of some sort of business that you might be running, more for options sure. will be better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my takeaway from this is that Intel is looking more at a more budget focused, wider distribution kind of model. And the specs on this are the same as the last gen NVIDIA chips, is what it says, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's for focus for people trying to run GPT 3.5 models or equivalents in clusters. So that's where they're focusing right now.
Yeah. And kind of, you can see it sort of from this graph too, right? Like the H1s and H2 NVIDIA chips, there's the Gaudi 3 there. You know, it's kind of equivalent to the previous generation of NVIDIA chips. But this idea again of just, this can't be bad because it's going to drive prices down. I think the other thing, and I hope I'm not mixing it up with another article, was that one of the things about this chip was it needed less power. I think it was sort of more power efficient, if I recall.
More efficient.
Than previous generations. So that can't be bad, right? Just on the amount of power that's required for all of this heavy lifting.
Yeah, that's going to be huge for these next chips. They're going to have to focus a lot, heavily focus on reducing power usage, increasing efficiency, that kind of workload, because they're running up against limits in terms of like power supply for these data centers, right? So the cost is huge.
Cost is huge. And think about, we were talking to a customer today, we were doing some bill analysis, and we went into the billing and cost management dashboard, whatever it was in AWS, and plunk right in front of you there is your sustainability. So how much environmental impact is your infrastructure causing, right? And we made a comment sort of again of, wow, look at this based on the types of workloads you're running. So anytime that you can reduce that, that's got to be good too, is trying to offset some of that stuff. So using less power is always good.
Yeah.
So that's Intel. I mentioned the fact that when I was reading these articles, a lot of them kind of just were so deep down in the weeds. Like, unless you are a total hardcore, like, hardware nut, you look at some of these articles, you're going to be like, okay, what is this? I guess it's better. And Meta here is no different. This kind of goes along with, remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about Meta's new cluster and they talked about,
right?
Yeah. It's kind of the same thing, right? Like, whoa. But I think the takeaway here is, again, just the fact of how much effort all of these large companies are putting into building the next generation of chips. And this is Meta building the next generation of chips that they'll use. And they specifically mention in here that these chips will be used in those next generation clusters that we talked about a couple weeks ago. So just another example of chip wars, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's so much attention and focus going into this right now in the chip market that it's kind of sucking the air out of everything else, it feels like.
Well, if I think about the fact that, I just mentioned use Gen AI and everything you're doing, I guess what you could do is, as you're reading this article, you could try to ask your GPT of choice to explain some of what this means to you or means.
Sure.
So you could take more out of the article, but it's essentially just, hey, here's a more powerful chip that is more efficient that will be powering the next generation of our AI tools.
Yeah, here's the backbone of our infrastructure going forward, basically.
Yeah, pretty much, right? Chip wars continue. Apple plans a new Mac line with AI-focused M4 chips. And I think this goes back to the comment that I made that from a consumer perspective, all of this is good because in this particular case, they're talking about putting these chips in Mac minis, MacBooks. Yeah. So you're going to have them on your desk. So I don't really know what else to say about this one. Choice is good.
It's just kind of a long. Yeah, choice is great. It's just another it's another look and another huge tech company that's going in on AI. And hopefully they patch out the vulnerabilities on the current gen as well. And good MacBooks.
Yeah. The one thing I noticed. Oh, go ahead.
I just said one thing I noticed was the stock jumped to by like 112 million as soon as they announced this. So.
Oh, wow. I saw that in the notes, actually. Yeah.
Or their market cap or whatever.
Yeah. I guess so that means we should have bought this stock before this came out.
Yeah. I guess.
A little quick day trading, you know, buy it before the announcement comes out, sell it the next day kind of thing. The thing that struck me with this is, where was it right here? PC makers have been in a slump since the end of the pandemic era boom in sales for working and learning from home. And then if you scroll down, they say here, Mac sales fell 27% in Apple's most recent fiscal. So I guess maybe the idea here is if we throw more horsepower at it, maybe people will buy them. I don't know.
Maybe if you throw like a special branding, like this will work better with your AI tools. That might be, might capture some more interest. But I feel like people have, they probably upgraded during the pandemic and the M1s and M2s are pretty good, all security flaws aside, right?
I don't know what else I could throw at mine would make it fall down, right? Like they're pretty beefy machines as it is right now. So what else could you do? I guess maybe this, to your point, is sort of the fact that maybe the intention is people will be over time running more and more local AI tools rather than sending all of your data over to a provider. So having that horsepower local will be important to have.
I think so. And I think that's a big deal with computing, like consumer devices and even like Internet of Things devices, which I think we'll see in the next couple articles here, but that's going to be a big deal is having smarter end, what they call it, edge devices, edge computing.
Yeah. So this reminds me, you're speaking about edge computing, this idea of like right now, all of the horsepower that you need is in large cloud service providers, right? And it seems to me like with this and the other slides we're going to look at here in a second is what these chip companies are doing is trying to build chips that get, closer to where you actually need that compute. Like I want it on my desktop or I want it in my house. I don't want to necessarily have to ship all of that data over to a cloud service provider to do the processing over there. I want to do it local if I can.
Right. Like you can run with some of these new chips, you can run small inference models on them, that kind of stuff. Right. So if you want to do some image detection on a camera sensor, or maybe you want to check some sensor input data, you might be able to run some model on that and pre-process it.
Yeah. And I guess there's also, security benefits of this too, right? Like as you're thinking about, like you were saying, if you've got cameras or sensor data, maybe that, you know, I'm thinking about home automation because I spend too much of my time doing that. But like the idea is always like, how do I keep this data on my own network rather than shipping it somewhere else just because of the sensitivity of that data? So maybe that also is going to be a potential reason why people will want this type of horsepower closer to the source of the data to keep it.
Oh, sure.
In theory, more secure, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's on your personal computer at that point, right?
Yeah.
Which is...
Or it stays on your home network or your business network or whatever it is that you're trying to...
Yeah.
Perfect. So I wonder how long it takes until I can get that really crazy AI horsepower on my phone.
So that, well, didn't Google has those Tensor chips, right?
Oh, they do. So
I think
you're
they might
right.
have to be building some of those into the newer Pixels.
Yeah.
I'm sure it won't be long until every smartphone has something like that.
Yeah. Isn't there a movie about that? Going back to the movie thing, isn't it like Joaquin Phoenix or something? I think we've maybe talked about this movie before. It's got a little device that he carries around with him.
Yes. You're talking about Her, I think.
Her. That's it. Yeah. All right. Chip wars continue. ARM here. building out Internet of Things chips for edge locations with compute power for AI in them. So, yeah,
exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, I briefly looked at this, but I know you shared this one. Any specific sort of thoughts on this one?
And I think we kind of covered it. Like, this is kind of, these chips are going into edge devices for Internet of Things applications. So that's going to be sensors, it's going to be cameras, and you're going to add more smart processing capability in these field devices, essentially.
Yeah. One of these articles talks about, I think it's Subaru.
They're using it. They're using it for their cruise control camera system, I think.
Here it is. So this is the article about a new AMD processor, a Vercel chip. And if you scroll down through it, this is what caught my eye right here. Subaru Corporation using it for their vision system known as EyeSight. So driver assistance systems, right? So again, getting that compute power right in your car instead of, I guess, having to ship it somewhere else. I don't know how they would do it right now.
Yeah.
Right. But
you would have to have some kind of connection back to wherever the model is running inference, right? But now you can run. I mean, I'm sure you could run inference before, but now you could run better inference locally where you are, right? Yeah. And you can ping back if you need to.
Yeah. So it says here, quote from Subaru, using the Gen 2 of the chip to deliver next generation automotive AI performance and safety for EyeSight. So it won't be long before everybody has these chips on board, all, like you said, all sorts of devices, whether it's cars, cameras, they're going to be everywhere. And then the go ahead.
I was going to say, they're going to be like, they'll be omnipresent. Yeah, they'll be, you won't be able to get away from them, right?
You'll just have it everywhere. Right? And then finally, another article here about Intel. Intel and Altera unveil a new AI-optimized edge processor, Agilex 5. So chip wars, right? Like, Agilex. Yeah. So we're back to yet another example of all of these big chip manufacturers kind of, I don't want to say playing catch up, but making sure everybody knows that they're in the same space. That, you know, the take from me on this was that it feels like a lot of them are just trying to make sure that people understand that it's not just NVIDIA doing this stuff, that other folks are out there building these things, trying to maybe get a little bit of airtime on it rather than NVIDIA grabbing up all the oxygen. I don't know.
More competition is good. So that's fine by me, but it does feel like NVIDIA is the end all be all of chips. If you look at the news and whatnot, but the other players they're catching up. So.
Yeah. And I think we talked about that a couple weeks ago, right? Like NVIDIA is kind of the new AWS, and the fact that they've had this sort of head start, very similar to what AWS had when they started sort of cloud computing, and everybody else is playing catch up. So I wouldn't be surprised if we continue to see lots and lots of articles around all of these other chip manufacturers and all the great stuff that they're building as well, to make sure that, like I said, NVIDIA doesn't suck up all the oxygen, and we know all the great things that AMD and Intel are doing as well.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect. Well, that is the show. It's all the news that's fit to talk about.
Everything that caught our interest anyways.
Yeah, exactly. So make sure you watch. We'll finish the show where we started the show. It's all about Fallout. It's the only thing that matters at this point. Watch the show tonight, and I'm sure we'll talk about it before the next episode, but I want to get your opinion on it. I'm going to watch episode 2 tonight, and I'll make sure that there's no spoilers. All right. Awesome. Thanks, folks, for watching. Here's the outro slide. We'll see you next week.